to the show with your friend and mine. So tell me, Dr. Squee, who's it gonna be this time? We like to hear you talk, and we love to hear you listen. And if you are not subscribed, you won't know what you're missing. So welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Headphones up. All right, let's take a look at this email and record this promo. Okay, hi, mate. If you could read this verbatim, that would be fantastic. Thanks for all your help. As always, love, Squee. Read it verbatim. Okay, no problem. Hi, guys. It's Matt from Matt in the Morning and the 505 Drive. I am super excited to tell you that my good friend and possibly the greatest broadcaster in history has finally joined SW20 Radio. That's right. Every Tuesday from 6 to 8 p.m., it's the Dr. Squee Show. Join in for incredible celeb interviews, a focus on local Welsh businesses, great music, and much more. Right here on SW20 Radio, the new sound of South Wales. As far as I go, Lizzie, I couldn't be more excited. I hope that was good, Squee.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. I'm Dr. Squee and this is my show. It's Tuesday at 6 o'clock and you're listening to SW20 Radio, the new sound of South Wales. And we've got an amazing show for you tonight. So I'm joined by the author, New York Times best-selling author Una McCormack, who's written for novels for Doctor Who, for Star Trek, for Blake 7, for Firefly, as well as her hugely successful own range of books. Wow, we couldn't be more excited to have her with us. She recorded this interview with me at Squeefest, which was my 24-hour fundraising event, which we did a little while ago. As well as that, later on in the show, we're going to be having Nicola join me, and we're going to be talking about The Alchemist, the wonderful cocktail place in Cardiff. And we're going to be doing that for our Man About Town section, where I go out into Cardiff or other places as well in South Wales. And we talk about the local businesses. Might be just small local businesses. In this case, it's a chain, but it's a wonderful highlight in Cardiff, I think. And man, I can't wait to tell you about all the cocktails they do. And they bring them out and they've got dry ice in them. So it's like a little potion lab right there in your cocktail. It's wonderful. As well as all that, we're also going to be playing your selection of tracks on the theme of writers and writing. So we thought, given we've got Una on the show tonight, it would be the perfect time. So please do write in. So you can either catch me on the social medias under Ian Shaw, IAINSHAW. You can email drsquee@gmail.com or the requests email for SW20 Radio. You can catch me on Instagram and Twitter at drsquee. You could send up a carrier pigeon. I don't know. Look, there's loads of ways of contacting me and putting your selections. We've already got a couple of wonderful choices. I'm going to start off. Let's do a double bill going out to my boy, Kyle. And here's our social media director here on SW20 Radio. And he selected two tunes. So I'm going to play two tunes just for him. So this is Mr. Writer, first of all, by Stereophonics. You're listening to SW20 Radio.
South Wales, we hear ya. SW20 Radio.
That was selected by Kyle Greenhalf, your friend of mine. And that was Elvis Costello, Every Day I Write the Book. I should say Elvis Costello and the Attractions. I didn't mean to miss out the Attractions for any given reason. Guys, we're about to go over to our interview in a minute. I've got to tell you, man, you may hear some barking in the background. It's been a long week for me. During my day job, I work for the NHS and I'm a team leader. And always I'm looking around me thinking, it's like, are you sure there isn't another adult in the room that they want to turn to for this? But yeah, here we are. I'm a team leader. We're making calls around the pandemic, around people getting the COVID vaccinations. I'm very proud to do this work. But we've had new starters this week, and that's always an interesting time. And just on Monday, I had there's two team leaders I work alongside, as well as a shift manager. They were all off. And then the one job above that is ops manager. And that person just left their post to go back. They were on secondment, so they went back to their usual job. So I'm pretty sure on Monday and Tuesday, I may have been CEO of the NHS. And I'm not sure I'm ready for that much responsibility. At the same time, I mentioned last week, there was a bit of a static problem on the show. Like, there was a lot of feedback. And that was because our two existing dogs that we already had, I say existing dogs, these dogs all existed, but we had Dottie and Benny, and we just got a new one, Willow. And the three of them were just causing mayhem, as they are tonight again. And they ran through the studio, and they knocked a wire out. And they didn't just knock the wire out, they loosened the wire. So everything was plugged in, as far as I could tell. And then I suddenly realized that that was why I was getting this awful kind of feedback on the microphone, was because one wire was slightly loose. And man, there is nothing, the only thing more frustrating than a wire being knocked out is a wire being slightly loose, because you don't know it's knocked out. You don't know to repair it. So that's been my week. Like, you know, I know that I say last week we got this new dog, Willow, but Willow, she's 6 months old. Man, is she just a factory of energy. She's a crossbreed. We're kind of guessing because she's a Romanian rescue. But we think there's some German Shepherd, some Collie, and maybe a bit of racing dog, maybe something like a Greyhound in there. And I tell you, that is an energetic mix of dog. So, you're getting Squee on his last embers of energy right here, but I am pumped and I'm energized to be here with you good listeners of SW20 Radio. Later on the show, we've got a special message from my friend and yours, Mr. Matt Leeds. He's going to be talking about the toy drive. He did this last year. It's an amazing thing. It's helping out children who don't have a lot, and they're in hospital, and they're, under the current situation, unable to get many visitors. So these toys, which Matt is collecting and you can donate to, you'll get all the details later in the show, really do make a bigger difference than ever. So please do stay tuned for that. But for now, I'm going to hand you over to my interview with Miss Una McCormack. As I say, she's written for all those wonderful properties such as Doctor Who, Star Trek, Blake 7, Firefly, amongst many others, as well as writing her own books. And in between that, we're going to be hearing a few tracks. So we've had Paperback Writer, which has been requested not only by my lady, Nicola, and also Mr. Matt Lees, but The Book of Love by Peter Gabriel, Love Letters by Alison Moyet, and Finch Letters to You. They're going to be peppered throughout this interview. But please enjoy this interview with the New York Times bestseller. Don't I bring you the best interviews here? Come on. Miss Una McCormack, and I will be back to talk to you a little later in the show, guys. Oh, sorry, just also to contextualise, because Una mentions it a couple of times, this interview followed an interview with Miss Sophie Aldred, which we've already featured on the show some weeks back. So when she mentioned that, that's what that's about. So please enjoy this. We're now going to welcome an author who's worked on books for Doctor Who, Star Trek, Blake 7. She's worked with Big Finish along with her own original works. Please welcome to the Doctor Squee Show, Una McCormack.
Hello. Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
I can. How is everything with you and your area of the world?
Absolutely fine. Gosh, what an honour to be following Sophie Aldred of all people. And you don't know who you're going to be coming after. So really exciting. I just caught the end of what she was saying. And she was a huge inspiration for me. Watching Ace when I was about 16 or 17 was really important to me. So I ended up writing a book about that. That important.
I genuinely think, like, it's sort of like right that I said the way I did and she corrected me. I think both are right, only because I think back then there was such a paucity of female role models. And yeah. Perhaps our understanding of gender was less at the time. So there's that in the mix as well. And she's right to correct me, though. Of course, anyone can be an inspiration to anyone. It's not gender specific. But I think there was certainly a thing to having a powerful female lead or companion, certainly in Doctor Who at that time.
Yeah, we wouldn't have had Rose without Ace, I think. Yeah. And that just opens up the show. And of course, we see Ace exploring her sexuality and being attracted to to boys and to girls. And, you know, if the times have been different, maybe, you know, should have been attracted to non-binary. It's a really important companion in the show's history, I think. So it's just wonderful. Yeah.
And of course, you worked in all these different different fandoms and different properties and franchises, whatever the correct term is. For you, what were the kind of influences when you were just starting out, when you were kind of growing up?
Oh, so the biggest influence on me is Blake Seven and watching Blake Seven and learning how to really enjoying the dialogue and thinking, I want to write dialogue like that. I want to write stuff that's, you know, a bit bleak and but at the same time wisecracking and kind of cracking along. So I loved Blake Seven. And I mean, I watched a lot of sort of fans of my age watched an awful lot of BBC drama. So and from that, you learn how to structure scenes and how to, you know, how to make a narrative trot along and how to make characters interesting. Incredible sort of performances you're watching. So Blake Seven was the biggest influence on me, I think. If you were to ask me what I was a fan of first, if you sort of made me pick between Star Trek and Doctor Who, I'd say Blake Seven, even over Deep Space Nine, I think. turns me off now. Have an hour of dead.
It's all fine. I do love the fact that Blake Seven seemed like the darker, broodier, younger brother to Doctor Who.
Yeah, exactly. Slightly slower. Yeah. And but yeah, it's sort of going through the same quarries, I think. And you know, people who are writing and producing and directing, they're all sort of, I mean, they're all working on the same corridor, aren't they? Chris Boucher is next to Bob Holmes and Bill Oramer and Dave Maloney. You know, they're all in the same building. So but yeah, it does feel like it's meaner, bleaker, slower, younger brother.
Yeah, and it brought in the sex, the violence, all the stuff which you would never be able to get away with in Doctor Who at the time, certainly.
Yeah, I'm not sure I remember much sex, but then I was eight. So
I'm thinking of, now you see, this is where I have to make a bit of a mission. I know of Blake Seven, but I've never got it past the pilot, and I do want to watch it, and I keep meaning to, I know. But Serverland, I think, is the correct...
To be fair, I was thinking of Paul Darrow, so, yeah. So
equally as sexy. I met both of them, and they were both equally as sexy in person, of course.
Absolutely. I can date the moment that my puberty started, and it's when Paul Darrow passed out in Aftermath, and my little heart went to flutter.
I'm going to blank on his name now, but Daniel Anthony, I believe it is, one of the kids from the Sarah Jane Adventures. I was doing some interviews at a convention, and I was speaking to Paul Darrow, and he was having great fun busting the chops of this young boy just next to him going, it's like, oh, I notice you've got all the nice girls visiting you. Where are some of my way after you're done with them?
Paul was amazing. I saw him at a convention not long before he died, and the star quality was there. I mean, he was fabulous. He was very politically incorrect. You know, he loved being the center of attention, but there was something very giving about him. And it was marvelous to see him, just a fantastic guy. We miss him very much.
Oh god, yeah. I mean, when I met him, he'd actually just had the accident which put him in the wheelchair. Horrific. I believe it was a health problem, if I'm remembering.
Yes, I think it was. Yeah.
And for a second there, and I say this story with love, hopefully it comes across like that, but I asked him about doing an interview because the person who was looking after the guest just go, oh, just go over and ask him. So, okay. I thought that's what you were there for, but that's fine. Because usually they're to keep the buffer between you and the stars. But anyway, I went over to him and I go, oh, would you mind just doing a quick interview? I was told it's okay to approach you. Mm-hmm. He goes, sorry, what? He turns to his wife and goes, what's he asking about? He's asking for an interview for a podcast. He goes, what's a bloody podcast? And I'm like, oh. And I'm like, in just that moment, because you don't know if you haven't met these people and if they've had health issues, you don't know if their health issues have maybe affected their mind. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I is this something I just haven't read about? Maybe this is really inappropriate for me to ask. Mm. And the next thing he's going, oh, you just have to check with these things. You never know who's going to talk to you. And then he made the joke to the young boy next to him. I go, oh, no, he's fine. Okay.
He's fine. Yeah, absolutely sharp as nails. Well, he was lovely with me. I turned up. He'd done a big finish for me and Jackie Pierce were in, which is, oh, my God, imagine for, you know, 8-year-old me can believe this is happening. Neither could, you know, 48-year-old me. And I handed it over, the sort of cover from my CD, and I sort of handed it over and I said, would you mind signing this? I wrote this. And he was just lovely. He was absolutely, and now I've got this cover to Una Love Paul. And it's the thing I'll take out if the, you know, if the flat's burning down, I'm going to grab that. I think it was really, really important. So yeah, brilliant.
Amazing man. Getting back to you, of course. Do you remember what the earliest things, and I always love this about writers, hearing about what they wrote in school. Do you remember any of the kind of school stories you wrote?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I remember writing was a Blake Seven Stickman cartoon, where they were all done like, you know, like little stickmen. So Avon was done with a black pen. And I think Blake was in a green pen because he had that green top, and Jenna was in a sort of pink and red one. So I did some Blake Seven Stickman cartoons. But then the thing I really remember writing was during the, it's the black and white Guardian season of Doctor Who. I have a battle against light and darkness in which a 10-year-old girl saves the universe. So kind of pull the story back to something really important to me. So those are the earliest things I remember writing, those two things. And then I started writing like Blake Seven fan fiction when I was about 16 or 17. I've never looked back. So
and yeah, you continue to this day.
Pretty much. Yeah. The rest is history.
And you've written for so many of these different properties. I mean, obviously, from what you're saying, you grew up with all of them. But I mean, how do you put your headspace into the characters? And I feel like it's really important when you're doing that to leave the, you've sort of got to keep the fan side, but leave it one side at the same time. How do you balance all that out?
Yeah, that's really tricky, actually, because you know that you're writing with the characters, with the settings, you know that you're writing something that people really, really love. And you don't want to get it wrong. But if you thought about that too much, you'd panic. So all you can do is sort of say, right, I'm going to tell this story the best that I can. I turn down stuff that you know, sometimes I'm approached, I'm asked, would you do something with this? And I say, look, I don't know the show. And I don't think you can do a good job if you don't know and like the show. Or sometimes, you know, I've been asked and I've said, look, I know the show, but I actually really don't like it. And I don't think that does your audience any service because you're just doing a job. And so I've always been lucky that I've been able to do projects of things that I really liked. And if you like it, I think you tell the best story that you can. And be true to what you believe those characters and that world is like. And usually you persuade people. Sometimes you really can't, I think. So I know a lot of people aren't really interested in my current book is autobiography of Spock. And I know that some people just don't get on with Discovery, and my book covers Spock in Discovery. So they're just not interested in reading it, and that's absolutely fine. You know, there's loads of Star Trek out there for them to watch and to read. And if they don't want to read stuff that covers Discovery, fine by me. So you don't want to disappoint people, but you've got to be true to your own vision of it, I think. And then hopefully people will be carried with that.
The worst thing I think someone can do is take on a property they don't like and try and fix it. Like we've all episode. It's like, well, I wasn't a fan going in, so I made it better. It's like,
and I've got fan fiction to do that in. You know, I can go over and, you know, I do. I still write Tolkien based fan fiction because I can't help myself. You know, I get stuff I don't like there. I just go and fix it or expand it or spend more time in. So I divert all my stuff into. Sometimes you can't resist it. I think when things are a little bit dated. So Blake Seven, the best one in the world, is pretty dated now. It's pretty sexist. And I've just written a short story. Just for an amazing project, actually. Somebody produced a completely fan-led Blake 7 annual 1982. Yeah, so the one we would have got if the show was still running. It's quite an amazing production. Just huge, beautiful colour, all fan design and fan led. And I wrote a short story for that because it was a charity thing and I thought, you know, that'd be good to get involved. And I did write a non-sexist Blake 7 story all about Jenna. So sometimes you can't help yourself going in and fixing it, but you try to keep true.
And we actually have got a question from the floor, so let's bring this in. James King from the Retrek podcast. We've got Love Reading, Last Best Hope. How much did they let you in on beforehand and how much could you invent? For example, did you need approval to make Worf the captain of the Enterprise?
Yeah, so that was the that's a Star Trek Picard novel. And it was I think there've been three or four now, but it was the first one. And I had a great time with that. I had loads of access. They were sending me scripts. And they were sending me scripts that were being revised. So some of them I read in, you know, 3, 4, 5 versions. And I think it's not really so much approval. What we did was after I'd read the scripts, I sat down with Kirsten Beyer, who is the co-creator of the show, and also used to be a Star Trek novelist herself. And she sort of is the liaison between the writer's room and all the kind of extended universe novels and comics and stuff. We sat down and worked up an outline together, sort of, you know, kind of sat down and went, these are the beats we want to cover. And then I wrote an outline. That went back to Kirsten. We had a few iterations of that. But the stuff about Worf as captain of the Enterprise is something that we sort of sat and discussed and said, okay, we've got to deal with this. Yeah, because Picard is leaving. And we kind of, you know, I think it was myself and Kirsten and Dayton Ward, and we kind of said, we think it should be Worf. So it was, it wasn't so much approved as something that kind of we decided we wanted to do. So these novels are a lovely mixture these days of feeling like you're in a writer's room, but then going off and having all the freedom of just going and writing a novel that you want to write. So it's a great mix for somebody like me, because TV writing, it's constantly rewrites and, you know, going past loads of people, but novel writing, you just sort of had to go off and get on with it. So that's how it's done. It's very, very collaborative and it's a great way to work. Yep.
Paperback writer.
Have you always found the different franchises you worked with as accommodating, or were there any times when it can be really difficult?
Oh, mostly the big problem with tie-in writing is that you're very short of time, or you often find you're very short of time, because TV production is very, very high pressure, getting scripts out and, you know, getting everything done on time. And, you know, they've got production deadlines. They've got to get a script ready to put in front of actors who need to be in front of a camera on a certain day. And with the best will in the world, the tie-in novels, are not that high a priority. You know, if you've got filming happening. So sometimes it can be quite late in the day when the outline gets signed off. That's the biggest stress. But then that's why you're hired. You're kind of hired because you kind of go, yeah, that's fine. I'll deliver that on time and hopefully publishable for more or less when you need to print it. I think your sort of appreciation of people like Pip and Jane Baker really changes. You kind of go, you know, they were really, you know, you could ring them up and they would, it might not be the most, you know, imaginative thing, but it would be solid and you would be able to film it.
you
get a new appreciation.
Kind of trial of the Time Lord, when their last minute game's like, oh no, you're not allowed to do this, you've got to do this instead.
And yeah. And it's like, don't panic, we'll get something in and you'll be able to film. And you know, there's a lot to be said about that. And and also I like Terror of the Vervoid, so
I haven't got a problem with it.
So I'm happy to be known as the Pip and Jane Baker of tie-in writing.
You mentioned before as well about writing the biography of Spock and the biography of Janeway as well. You've done. How is it, like, first of all, you've got so much source material, like Janeway there alone, there's so many kind of little references and little in comments throughout the episodes. Someone like Spock, though, which has now been done across multiple shows, how do you bring it all together? And do they ever say it's like, no, you can't say he did that because he did that then. And also, by the way, we've just written for Discovery that he's now going to have this other relationship. And
yeah, well, this was so the Janeway one, at least it's a, well, when we wrote it, it was a closed canon. But immediately they go, hey, Prodigy, oh great, okay, well, never mind, we just but then, you know, that happened with so there was a novel while the show was on production by Jerry Taylor, who, you know, obviously was writing for the show, which was a sort of a life story of Janeway called Mosaic. Yes. And that was published maybe season 3. And then I think she left the show, and they just contradicted loads of that. So it's just something you have to deal with. You know, you just say, here's my view of the character. And I think of it a bit like sort of different stories of King Arthur or different stories of Robin Hood. You know, is he Robin of Locksley, or is he is he a Saxon grunt, or is he Robin of Huntingdon? Is he a Norman lord? You've just got to roll with it, yeah. So the Janeway one, at least it was a closed canon, and you know, you just I could work with that. The Spock stuff was pretty. There were some hairy moments, particularly as we knew, you know, Strange New Worlds was going into production, and we just had to say, okay, we can't know anything about that. Here's what we do know about, and let's focus on that. So we knew that, you know, he had a relationship with Pike, and to pick out episodes that people knew or that we could kind of assume were going to happen. Of course, he's writing this right at the end of his life, so it was less narrating episodes of his life and more sort of reflecting on people that he'd known. So yeah, it was kind of. We had, what do we have? We got in Discovery, obviously the original series. We had the movies, and we even got in the animated episode of him being a kid and meeting himself as a time traveler. So we got that in. So it was quite tough. There's a great guy I've mentioned already called Dayton Ward, who is a Star Trek novelist himself. And he's a consultant on the show, and he's all the shows, and he's forgotten more about Trek than I've ever known. And then the brand manager at CBS, John Van Sitters, is just a kind of absolute guru. So if I miss anything, these guys are like, I think you have forgotten, or may I just point out, and these sorts of things. So really tiny things like the Doctor changing between the pilot and, you know, the first episode, that kind of thing. Ooh, you know, I completely miss that. These guys are on top of it. So yeah, we've got some good people in place.
And I find that those kind of novels are such a challenge to write, just because not only have you got to get all these different references, get all this kind of through line to it, but actually adding that through line of a story around all these various different adventures.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you work with that?
Well, this is where my training as a fan fiction writer comes in very handy, I think, because a lot of what you're doing as a fan fiction writer is finding your story through stories that other people have told. People who review fan fiction, they don't take any prisoners. You know, they're there for good stuff. They're there for emotional hits and specific things, but they're there for a good story and for good writing. So I kind of cut my teeth on finding the story in gaps of other people's stories. So it feels very similar to doing that kind of thing. You just don't panic. If you're telling somebody's life story as these do, you decide the person who they are now, and then you weave that back through the narrative that you're trying to tell. So try not to panic.
Don't panic. We bring in
Don't panic. Indeed.
As well. We bring in another franchise.
The great Douglas Adams, yeah.
Doesn't get better than that, does it? I find what's amazing about, as someone who grew up such a fan of Hitchhiker's Guide, I find it amazing when someone manages to capture his kind of anarchy in a story without trying to do a bad impression of Douglas Adams, because we've all read sci-fi novels where it's someone's obviously just trying to do an impression of Douglas Adams and it never works. No. And I think you and like writers like James Goss, who worked with Douglas when he was alive and kind of was mentored by him a bit, you found a way of kind of, yeah, as I say, capturing that anarchy without being a copy.
Oh, that's very kind. I mean, James, I think, is just a flipping genius. I've worked with James quite a bit, and he's just brilliant. He's just got an absolute gift for story, and not just story, but he's got a gift for character. And he's also a really, really good prose stylist as well. He's just phenomenally talented. And we're so spoiled having him working on Doctor Who stuff. You know, he should be coining it in and you know, all these sort of things. So we're very spoiled. And I always love working with James. It's just sort of, his notes are always really, you know, he's right, you haven't pushed it here and you haven't pushed it here. So, we've sort of worked together on Bernice Summerfield and things. And it's always been great. He knows exactly what he wants. And he knows the right writer to pick for the story that he wants from them. So you know he will come to you and ask you to do a specific story because he knows you'll be good at it. James is great to be mentioned in the same breath as James and Douglas Adams. That's very flattering. So. Douglas is incredible. I'm just trying to indoctrinate my 8-year-old. So she's a bit young for the books, but I just sort of when we're playing her kind of imaginative games, I brought in the whale and the bowl of petunias today, and she really liked that. So she thought that was hilarious. You know, the ground. I wonder if he'll be friends with me. Death. and then the flowers were the
perfectly,
you know,
done
the
by ice. Stephen Moore giving the voice to the whale in the TV show.
Exactly. Yeah. So I might show her that bit later and see what she thinks of it.
I must admit, not such a fan of the film, but that's another story. Anyway.
Yeah.
They Americanized it.
Like I say, it's like Arthur and you know, Robin Hood. You've just got to have
their own mythology.
Exactly.
Have you got to work on it? So you mentioned working with James. Of course, you've done a lot of work with Big Finish. Have you got to work on any of the Torchwood stuff? And if not, when's it going to happen?
That would be fun, wouldn't it? That'd be really, really good. Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the times where they've managed to basically recast. Like they do work with the kind of classical Torchwood cast. But they've completely reinvented it with a new crew, and in fact, several new crews over the timeline.
Yeah, well, they've been clever, haven't they? I think he's done brilliant things with Torchwood. I think he has a real instinct that sometimes I think that the show didn't always. Yeah,
yeah.
I think so, and he's found James has found exactly, you know, what the show should be. So who knows? Never say never. So it's quite hard to fit Big Finish stuff in at the moment. I've been really lucky over the past couple of years to get, you know, lots and lots of novel work. And I've been finding it quite hard to sort of fit Big Finish stuff in. But I'm always up for something, particularly if it means working with James. Yeah.
Fantastic. And have there been any times when you're working on ongoing show where you have been told specifically, it's like, can't touch that, we're working with that right now?
Oh, yes. Yeah. There's,
and
you know,
any examples you can now talk about that.
A couple of my Doctor Who novels, I think I sort of, you know, you're asked to throw in ideas and they kind of go, not that one, can't say why. You're all right, okay, I'll see that on screen in a couple of, and that sort of thing. So, I that happens all the time. I think Doctor Who, as someone said to me, Doctor Who eats story, yeah? Oh, blah, 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 you know, feed me. So you're always going to land on something, I think, that someone else has done. And things get in the zeitgeist, don't they? It's like Hollywood coming out with several examples of a similar sort of film, yeah? You've probably read the same article on BBC News, or, you know, you've watch the same documentary or something, so you pitch an idea and they go, oh no, somebody's got that covered. So so once or twice I think it happened but we're talking one-liners, because you start with a one-liner and say, how about this, and they go, well, not that, we've done something similar, or not that, can't say why, or that but not that bit is often what happens. You go, well, that bit was the point of the story, so but that's what you're there for. You're there to kind of generate ideas and throw it into the huge hungry maw that is Doctor Who.
Yeah. And I think that's also with Doctor Who, it's one of those shows where it does lend itself to very complex stories and with a few things happening at once. So you'll think you've got a wonderful story, but then it's like, oh yeah, I need some more story here because Doctor Who's so kinetic.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things I really learned from James as well, and it's very easy to kind of get lost in the plot or the gimmick. And one of the things he's great at pulling you back to is saying, no, it's got to come from character. Yeah. It's got to matter to the people who are involved. It's got to matter to them for reasons. We did some mentoring of new writers together. There was a series of Doctor Who scripts that they did James had commissioned new writers. And then I think there were four of us who were quite experienced Big Finish writers. And we kind of mentored these new writers through their scripts. And that was the thing we sort of, you know, they were people were great at kind of high concept. And what you were doing in the scripts was saying, right, we'll keep that high concept there, but here it's got to, you know, what do they want from this? And the thing I always talk about is Douglas Adams, actually. So I used to teach creative writing and getting people to think about this. I would say, you know, if you think of Arthur Dent, what he wants all the way through that story is a cup of tea, okay? And that's quite a straightforward want, yeah? He just wants a really good cup of tea, yeah? And that's humorous. What brings it to tragedy and genius is that the place where he can get a cup of tea was destroyed at the start of the story, yeah?
Yeah.
And that's why it's genius. So he wants something very simple, and what it represents is everything that he's lost. And that's why Douglas Adams was a genius. And that's why that's a really great way of thinking about high concept storytelling that matters to the characters. And that's something you try and come back to again. And when I'm getting lost in a script, you kind of lean back and go, what are these people feeling? What do they need? What do they want? Why are they invested in what's happening here? And if in doubt, have a companion character going, yell, Doctor, I don't understand.
Nice get out.
Exactly.
And for anyone watching who wants to extrapolate why I didn't like the movie, hear what Una just said about what Arthur Dent wanted and think about what he wanted in the film. It's not the same. Anyway, that's my little gripe.
Yeah.
One which I thought was amazing that you worked on was Firefly. So it was a short-lived show, but I had such a fandom and I think such a kind of clear story between the TV show and the way they wrapped it up with the movie with Serenity. Mm. I thought it was an amazing arc. How do you go about, like, I think that's one which was really difficult to find an area for a good story in and not feel like you're taking away from that arc of the story.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think what I went there was I thought let's put characters together that actually we don't see together very much in the show, which we would have seen. I think he had five seasons in mind.
That's why the film is so amazing. It's like the fact they brought in a series worth of plot and it's a coherent film. It doesn't feel rushed and it answers the story perfectly.
Oh, it's a wonderful film. I really enjoy watching it over and over again. So I thought, okay, well, part of the joy of Firefly is seeing these characters in action. So let's put together characters that we didn't get the chance to see together very much. So the book isn't out yet, so I won't say too much about it. It's got Zoe and Book on the cover, so that might be a little clue to some of the stuff that happens. But that's how I tried to do it, because ultimately, you know, there aren't many plots really in when it comes to plots. So adventure course, there aren't that many, you know, there's maybe five or six. So you have to sort of hand wave and go, but look, these characters, you've not seen them together before, and here they are bouncing off each other. And that's part of the fun of Firefly anyway. So I hope people enjoy it. It's called Carnival. It's out a couple of months, I think, out in November. If we're still able to print books in November.
Get it on the Christmas list.
Yeah,
it's the only thing that's safe to do, I think, at the moment. But there we go.
Yeah, exactly. So that was Firefly. That was really on my wish list of something to do. So that was a real kind of, I'm pleased I did that. Yeah,
that was something I was going to ask you, because you have worked in so many properties. What are the ones which for you would be the dream list of properties to write for now?
So my absolute joke is that I would love someone to commission me to write a tie-in novel for the forthcoming Lord of the Rings series. Why not? You know, I'd totally be up for that. I think that would be a hoot. I don't think they'd dare do it. But I think I've pretty much, I would love to do some Star Trek audio. I'd love to do something like that. I've just got hooked on The Expanse, and it'd be great to do an audio for that. I think there's sort of gaps there. It's pretty tightly plotted, mind you, and obviously that's a series of novels already. But I think I've been really lucky. You know, I think I've more or less got, you know, I've got to do Star Cops, which I adored, absolutely loved. So, you know, maybe I should just get off and write something of, you know, it's my own franchise. I should probably do that.
I mean, you have done your independent works, of course. And again, it sort of leads me very neatly onto another question I was going to ask you about. Do you prefer working these kind of franchises you grew up with, or do you prefer creating your own world? And yeah, have you ever thought about expanding it into a franchise of some sort?
Yeah, I suspect I would need a co-writer for that kind of thing. I think it's the kind of thing that I would really enjoy, sort of bouncing ideas with someone and building a world with someone. So, you know, if there's someone out there who'd like to invent a multi-million franchise series with me, let me know. I guess the thing is, I quit my day job about 2 years ago. So I was teaching creative writing at a university. And if any of your listeners know about working at a university, you don't get any time to do anything other than teach and mark. And I was finding it really stressful. And I got a couple of good contracts. And I thought, right, let's just give this a go. I've been writing for 15 years now. Let's just quit and give it a go. So for the past couple of years, it really has been a case of, right, I've got to get my head down and write books and do stuff that I'm offered, build up a little runway. But I'm hoping soon that I can sort of just take a little break and go, right, this is the book I want to write, and get down and do it. So that's going to happen, I think. Yeah.
Fantastic. And for you, you mentioned the kind of mentoring and also teaching writing. I know for a lot of writer friends of mine, they actually, when I asked about, like, how are you doing with the pandemic during lockdown? They're going, it's like, it's brilliant. It's great, isn't it? Like, everyone now is thinking like I do. But obviously going into a mentoring and teaching space, that's a very outgoing kind of thing. Is that something that always kind of came natural to you? Because it isn't always a given with writers.
So, I'm from a family of teachers. So I think it was, it's very funny, actually. I'm from a family of sort of primary school teachers, actually. And I wouldn't dream of teaching primary, but I was traveling on a train with my daughter about 3 or 4 years ago. I was talking about something to her. So I was reading something to her, and then I was explaining about it. And a woman walked past up the train. She went, "You're a primary school teacher." Oh, that's harsh. No, I'm just her mother. You know, I was just raised by primary school teachers. I couldn't teach that age group, which I had a sort of practice of during lockdown. Obviously, we were homeschooling. I taught a little bit. I sort of picked it. I was actually teaching sociology to engineers, people doing engineering degrees who had taken a kind of management studies course. And I was teaching them sort of Sociology 101. That's a payback for crimes of a past life. Yeah. And I just really enjoyed it. I found I had and I think it's just that, I think it's the way I write prose as well. I think I've got quite a crisp, clear way of explaining things. And then a friend of mine, a science fiction writer, invited me to go along and join him teaching a creative writing seminar. And I just got a huge amount from it. It really made me sort of think about my own writing, but it was really, really important. It's about 10 or 12 years ago. And then they offered me a job, and I found that I was extremely, I just had a knack of reading people's novels and saying, what you need to do is this, this, and this. And here's the book, the novels that you should be reading to learn how to do this, this, and this. And I just found I had a knack for it. And it you know, people seem to have found my advice helpful. So they kind of keep coming back. And it was all, you know, I loved the teaching side. I think academia just got very bureaucratic and admin heavy. And I just didn't enjoy that side. I wanted to read people's books and help them grow those books into publishable books. And I can do that without being an academic. So I still do a little bit of mentoring. So and I saw all my PhD students through. So my last PhD student just passed her viva. She wrote a novel set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. She invented an Australian Aboriginal superhero and wrote a novel that was kind of critiquing the MCU. And it's sort of colonialism. It's just, it's absolutely great. So so she's gone through. We're all just super proud of her. She's a brilliant, brilliant writer. So I hope we'll see. I hope people see her name on books very soon. Yeah.
I hope she tackled in Black Panther, as much as I love that film, the fact that the first thing that one of the people of Wakanda said is like, I hope they bring a Starbucks. Yeah, because that's what Africans need, our cultural coffee.
We didn't touch Black Panther, actually. It was Black Widow. It was sort of dealing with white feminism and how it, how same sort of thing, that sort of white feminists come in as saviors, and then the sort of the women of color say back to them, no, we don't need this, and we don't want this, and we, you know, this is what we need and want. What we want you to butt out and let's get on with it. And unfortunately, she'd finished it just before Black Widow. So the viva went through before Black Widow was released. So she didn't have to kind of, you know, rewrite it or anything. So had a great essay on it as well. So I think that might be the first PhD awarded to a fan fiction, or academics call it transformative work. So really, really groundbreaking. So proud of her. Oh, I loved teaching.
Amazing. And having been someone who's been through the education system as a teacher, what do you think as a system it needs to do to help support writers better? Because to me, I hated the fact that when I was going through school, I've got such a joy for so many subjects I hated at school, because they were just made to be dull as possible facts, as opposed to getting the excitement of writing. Like, that was one of the few things I did get when I was in school. I had a few good English teachers, but what tricks do you think they're missing?
Well, I mean, I can't really speak to secondary school, because, you know, it's a year since I was at a secondary school. My daughter isn't there yet. She's eight. I sort of have a mixed. I know people really really are down on the grammar, the teaching of grammar. And I think it is too. Oh, the phonics was absolutely dreary. Teaching her to read by phonics, because it really, really affected her spelling. She had to kind of unlearn. It's not how we spell in English. But then I do know that phonics is very, very good at. I think what phonics is very good at is getting. There's a sort of band of kids who struggle with reading. That phonics is really good at raising their game. So it's not for a rapid, you know, the kid just read very quickly, and we've kind of unpicked her spelling. I think the grammar is probably a bit mechanistic, but then I wished I'd been taught grammar as a kid. I never got any sort of formal grammar training. So I think in all these things, you've just got to find the fun in it. and her teachers, and God bless them doing this through lockdown, really have managed to keep the fun in it. So and I hope that kind of keeps on. There's got to be an element of play for as long as possible, because I know that when I sit down to work and write a book, if I'm getting stressed about it, I go, come on, Una, this is meant to be play. And once I feel playful, even if the subject matter is quite serious, I just get better results, because you find the joy in it and the reason that you want to do it. So whatever can make it feel like play and something that is joyful and creative, including maths, yeah, because you can do that with maths and science, keep that going for as long as possible. And the exams take care of themselves, yeah. Don't stress about that. Don't stress about it.
There's some people who see the outright beauty in math. I always find it so intriguing. Like, you know, you hear about Stephen Hawking seeing the beauty of all these formulas, and I love the way they talk about that. It would never be me, like, but it's kind of.
I'll tell you what. If you want the joy of maths, turn on the CBeebies show Number Blocks, because it absolutely delivers it, and it gets some pretty complex. We were watching it. My other half was going, that's the kind of basis of some computing theory. And, you know, this is all that, this is CBeebies show. Also, it's kind of singing numbers. So, you know, what's not to like?
Numbers. Remember that little flying thing which used to sing about Magic E? But
Wordy from Look and Read. Yep. I'm an apostrophe. Come and take a look at. Oh, yes, I remember that. Yeah. I think I follow him on Twitter as well.
Oh, is he on Twitter? Oh, that's my
There's a Look and Read account that sort of tweets memories from it, and it's got Wordy. Yeah, it was a guy with the arms. Yeah. Oh, I remember him. Yeah.
I'm having quite a magical day for this. We're talking about this now. I've just spoken to Dennis Nasher and Tree Futon. Early on, we had a message from Basil Brush. Like, this is a wonderful day for me.
Yeah, well, when I tell the 7-year-old that I've, you know, I came on after Dennis, she's so Beano, she's mad about the Beano. So
brilliant.
And so is Mark Hamill. Did you see that on Twitter today?
No, is he
about Mark Hamill? He's a Beano fan. Yeah, he picked it up when they were filming Star Wars in 1976. And he's been a member of the fan club since 1979. I mean, if you didn't love Mark Hamill already, it's his 70th birthday, and the Beano were kind of tweeting happy birthday, and you know, and there he was with a picture of him in the, you know, and his kid. I think in 1979 he joined when his kid was born. I know, as if he didn't love Mark Hamill enough already. He's so Beano as well.
For me, and again, we're going off on tangent, but it was when he did an episode of Man Down with Greg Davies. And like
the
character who was like the shady diner owner. And it's like, right, I'll put you through to Big George. Oh, fine, I'll go and talk to him, walk out back, and it's Mark Hamill.
I know. He could just pick and choose. That's a franchise I would love to do something in, if only because it would impress the 7-year-old because she loves Star Wars. She very carefully picked the only franchise that I had never written in. Kind of say, that's the one I love. Yeah, that's the one I really adore. So I've got a bookshelf behind me, and I'm not kidding, it's sort of four shelves of my stuff. Yeah, so it's Star Trek, it's Doctor Who, it's all my audios and everything. And she was standing in front of it the other day, and I had a pile of books by Vonda McIntyre, though. I'm writing about her at the moment, written a lot of Star Trek books. I'm not kidding. My kid's eye went, is that a Star Wars novel? It's Vonda McIntyre, so she homed in on the Star Wars one. So so I would, if I could write a book about Leia, I would be the best mum. So I should probably do that one day, yeah.
Let's go back onto the stuff you have done with Doctor Who. Yeah. How many doctors is it you've written for now?
Oh, I was talking about this the other day. So let's go through them, shall we? I've done one. I've done a short trip, haven't I? This sporting life. Yeah. I've done a big finish short story of two. I've not done three.
Okay.
I've not done four. I've not done five. Which is big, and five's a favourite of mine. I've done six. Mm-hmm. I've done an audio with it's a lovely one. So I absolutely love that one. It's called An Eye for Murder. It's a sort of detective. No, it's like a Dorothy L. Sayers with Colin Baker and Nicola Bryant. So I've done six. I've done a couple of things with Sylvester McCoy. I've done my main range was a Sylvester McCoy with Sophie Aldred, actually. Bonnie Langford. Bonnie Langford sings the Internationale in it. So I've done seven. And then I've got it here. Did this book, Time Lord Victorious. And my goodness, that was an absolute goldmine. That's struck off cool. 8, 9, and 10. I hadn't done them before. And then I've done novels for 11, 12, and 13. So three, four, and five are my gaps. Yeah, and War Doctor, I guess, as well. And Doc Martin, as we're calling him, I think. So those are my gaps, I think. Those three. The War Doctor and Doc Martin. So it's pretty good, I think. That's not bad, is it? Yeah. Of course, we've got another one coming soon, so excitingly. So,
I sort of do understand the appeal of, obviously, I understand how wonderful Tom Baker is and how wonderful the Fourth Doctor is, but I feel like that's quite a well-trodden path. The Fifth Doctor, you can do some really interesting stuff. I always thought it was a great response to the Fourth Doctor because you can't out-eccentric Tom Baker. So what you have to do is go really mild-mannered, really like a man of the people, really everyone kind of likes him kind of character. So I think you'd smash that one.
And avuncular, sort of gently, like your favourite young uncle or something, I think. It's it's really, if you watch a lot of sort of 70s, if you watch a lot of sort of 70s TV shows, things like Ace of Wands, the characters are often a little bit older than the kids who are watching it. So you sort of have people who are in their 20s. Tomorrow People to a certain extent as well, I think. So there's a little bit of that in it. And I loved that TARDIS crew. I loved Tegan, Nyssa, Adric. I loved particularly that first season, the stories in it. You know, I love Porter Doomsday. It was very, very magical. Hence my, 10-year-old saving the universe against the black and white guardian. So I'd love to do a fifth doctor story if Big Finish are listening.
Can't you see that I want to be there with open arms? It's empty
to get back to you writing for Doctor, so is there a Doctor which you have written for so far that was your favourite to write for, that you really felt like you found the voice on?
I loved writing that main range that it's called Red Planets. It was a four part. It was just really exciting to get invited to write for that because you felt like it was, I'm never going to get to write for the show, because I'm not a TV writer and it's such a huge gig. You get people like Gaiman, writing. So I'm never going to. So it felt like getting to do my Doctor Who. So that was it. That was really, really special. But then in the novels, I loved writing the Ninth Doctor. I just found the speech patterns for it. Maybe it's because I'm from near that part of the world as well. Mm. I found the speech patterns really easy to do. And there's a sort of I just find it a really poignant character to write, that you've got this superficial sort of these bad jokes and making light of things, but there's just this incredible sadness and loss that it's all you've got this gurning and stuff, but then there's just this deep well of grief, and it's a really, really interesting character to write. So I'd love to. They're doing audios with him now, aren't they? if you're listening, Big Finish.
I mean, I think it's a really interesting area because they've sort of said it before Rose, and I understand why, because it's a natural gap to fit stories into. The only critic, and by the way, wonderful stories. I really love the box sets. The only thing is, I think to do that, you've sort of got to ignore the fact that he found his humanity again through Rose, and sort of like they've had to inject that earlier. Again, I understand for narrative reasons.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really interesting to find a way of introducing why he kind of lost it again for Rose to be
That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, because it's a perfect narrative, isn't it, really, that you see someone who's kind of given up and is just going from place to place, and yeah, he finds a reason to live. Well, a reason to die, actually, of course, isn't it? Yeah. I'm off now.
No, you're going to sell me off. One which I wanted to ask about, just because it happens to be my favourite Doctor. It used to be Peter Davison, who's still very high in my estimation. But when I saw Matt Smith in the role, for me, it summed up everything I loved about Doctor Who. It was that big adjunct... I've lost the word I was trying to use there, but like a big kind of enthusiastic character who, it didn't matter who you were, as long as you were trying to be on the side of good, it didn't even matter if you succeeded, you were accepted by him. And that meant a lot to someone who grew up being bullied and kind of had a really tough time at school. That's what I found in the Doctor. It was like he was just this big jolly fellow who just accepted everyone. And I think Matt Smith nailed it. Can you tell us a bit about writing for his voice?
I completely agree that it's just a... I did one of the first batch of novels, I think, and we were invited down to Cardiff to see some of the rushes, sort of the early versions of it. So, you know, before they've quite got all the special effects on, there was a whole gang of us in a room. I think we watched the first three episodes. They had less and less effects on as we went on, but 11th hours more or less there, and I was just... I can't believe how good he is. You know, he's just walked straight. You think he's got to follow David Tennant. He's the youngest guy ever to be cast. And it was like he just walked on and owned it in every single way. So, you know, he's got that gentleness with this frightened child. Then he's got that, you know, the fish custard. Then he's got the, you know, the madman with a box sort of thing he does. And then you get that steal at the end where he just walks and, you know, it's completely brilliant. And what he was able to do was he was able to act the Doctor's age, I think.
Yes.
You felt these were old. There was an old man or an old person of experience inside this playful young man. It's really, really interesting. I remember, I think it was Simon Guerrier said to me once that what's brilliant about it's the physical side is very good as well. So he's very like Troughton, you know, he's sort of the kind of slapstick is very good. But the way that he's playing it, he's like he's playing it for a 4x3 screen, but it's being done. So he's all like this. He's playing it for a smaller television, and in fact he's in widescreen, but the Matt Smith Doctor is playing it for, you know, a 60s TV, which is a great way of thinking it. He's like, he's not quite fitting in the box. And the physical stuff is great. It's just courageous. I remember
Matt Smith commenting that when he looked through the Doctors, it was Patrick Trant which stood out to him, and you can completely see it in the performance. It's a completely new Doctor at the same time.
It's just brilliant, yeah.
Yeah. I could talk to you all night. Thank you for being such an inspiration to, as Sophie corrected me, we'll just say young authors everywhere, and showing that anyone can do it and do a fantastic job, and to come from a teaching background, which is also a very noble thing to do. And thank you very much for all your great work in all these great different genres and franchises.
Bless you. My pleasure. So you take care. Okay.
Thank you. I'll see you soon. Bye.
Righto. Bye-bye.
And thanks once again to the most wonderful Una McCormack. We're going to play some more tunes on the theme of writers and writing in just a minute. But first, we're going to hand over to a promo which was sent to me by Mr. Matt Lees. And this is for his wonderful work on a very special project which he's going to tell you all about now.
Last year, thanks to the kindness of listeners just like you, the SW20 Matt in the Morning Toy Drive donated 172 toys to the Noah's Ark Children's Hospital charity. And this year, we'd like to continue this wonderful tradition. The amazing humans at Noah's Ark each year make such a difference to the approximately 73,000 children from across Wales who receive specialist and life-saving treatment. With the world still shaken by a global pandemic, charities are in need of our help now more than ever. Many children are facing a Christmas morning waking up in a hospital bed rather than at home with their families, and due to COVID restrictions, may only be allowed to see a single member of their family. We want to try to bring a little bit of magic and a little bit of sparkle back to Christmas for these families. Here's where you come in. If you'd like to help, we're collecting donations of brand new and unopened toys for kids of all ages. We can arrange for you to post them to us, or one of our team can safely collect it from you. Donations can also be left at one of our hubs for us to collect later. Child's Play Private Nursery in Newport and High Street Fitness in Pawnee Pool. You can also help with a cash donation, which will be used for one last toy shop on the deadline date, which is December 16th. If you'd like to get involved, every little donation really makes the difference. Please get in touch at mitmtoydrive@gmail.com. That's MITM like Matt in the Morning Toy Drive at gmail.com. Or contact any of the SW20 radio presenters who will point you in the right direction. The SW20 community is so incredibly kind and supportive, and I can't wait to see what kind of magic we can bring back to Christmas in 2021. Deadline for donations is December 16th. You can drop it off, post it, or we'll pick it up, or you can make a cash donation. For more information, mitmtoydrive@gmail.com.
And thank you to my favorite ho ho ho, I don't know where I was going with that. Look, thank you very much to Matt. What a wonderful cause. How wonderful it is that he managed to get so many toys last year for this great cause, for these kids who aren't going to be having the best of Christmases. You can just bring a bit of light back into their lives by giving Lizzy a toy to pass on. So please do that. It's such an amazing thing he's doing. We've got a couple more tracks, and then we're going to talk about our Man About Town section for this week, which is going to be talking about the Alchemist Cocktail Lounge, and Nicola's going to be joining me for that very shortly. First of all, let's hear just a couple more tracks on the theme of writing. So this next one was selected by our guest this week, Una McCormack, and this is Rubber Band Girl by Kate Bush. You're listening to SW20. That was Natasha Bedingfield and Unwritten, and you're listening to the Dr. Squee Show, and you're driving home with the doc on a Tuesday night. We're now going to pass over to our jingle pending Man About Town section as we hear dogs barking in the background, because just that's how we're rolling at the moment, guys. We will try and limit it as much as possible. We've got a new puppy. She's doing a very successful job of winding up the puppy we already have. So there we go. And of course, for the Man About Town section, not always, but I often like to welcome my lady, my woman. It's Nicola Gosling. Nicola, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you.
Not missing sleep at all with the new puppy.
I'm absolutely knackered.
Yeah, we're having an interesting time with it, guys. And Nicola now with her own microphone, which she may talk into every now and again.
I thought you were going to say which she made.
No,
I made out of some paper mache. Are you going to take? So I feel important.
Are you going to take credit for making the microphone?
Yeah.
And do you know what else, guys? Like, we've got this lovely new mixing board. I've finally got everything wired in correctly, so nothing's feeding back or anything like that. I was just about to play some tracks earlier on the show, and a popular streaming site which we use to stream our music
chose to go down at that moment. So I finally get everything working. And the streaming service doesn't work. So I was very quickly, hastily putting together tracks, which I had already on my computer. But it seems to have worked okay there for Natasha. So, Nicola, what are we talking about tonight?
Well, before that, we mustn't forget all the other popular streaming sites there are out there.
That's why I didn't say the name. I was being very studious. And also, well, let's just say SW20 does have a streaming license, so it's all perfectly legal. But I'm wired in through another through my account. So, like, it's all legal. We're all licensed to do this. It's all fine, guys. But we're using SW20's wonderful service. Yeah.
Okay. We're talking about The Alchemist in Cardiff.
Now, we spoke a few weeks ago about cocktail bars, which we went to. So we went to I'm going to forget the name now.
Dead Canary.
The Dead Canary. Now, what I loved about the Dead Canary was, and I'm sorry, we are going to get round to The Alchemist, but the Dead Canary chose some really interesting cocktail ingredients, which you might not usually find. So such as, you know, they used some Earl Grey tea and some hibiscus, I think it was, and a bit of pepper in one of them. And it was wonderful. I'd say The Alchemist is more your traditional cocktails. So, like, again, I'm going to be very careful. I don't want to, like, damn them with faint praise. But, Nicola, you found them a little bit sweet. But if you're...
Not all of them, just one of the ones I had. And that's okay, because we swapped it, didn't we? Because it was too...
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. They do a lot of things with... Is it dry ice? Is that right to say that?
Yeah, you see, it's a very roundabout way of doing it, but I kind of want to highlight that the both of these places do very different cocktails, but I love both of them. They were just different. So if you're into your more traditional cocktails, they've got those flavours. I was going to get onto the dry ice. What I found great about this was, though, we just got into Cardiff when we, because, you know, of course, my radio show comes from the Welsh Consulate here in Southampton. And we just got into Cardiff. We were tired and we were kind of like legging it to this place because you book a slot, much like the Dead Canary, which we mentioned before. And, you know, we had to get there for the slot because you just get this specific amount of time because they're so popular. And we went there and we were like legging it. And, you know, when you're tired and we'd, you know, been traveling since early in the morning, you already feel like you're a couple of drinks in because, you know, you get that tired kind of haze to you. Then you have a couple of these cocktails and we made the mistake of not realizing these are not your average cocktails. These ones are loaded and we're used to some loaded cocktails. There's a wonderful place here called The Hobbit, which does some cocktails with quite a bit of booze and doesn't hold a patch. These are loaded drinks, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're good, good. Do you know what's really interesting is when you read and you think, oh, I'll have that, and it's got the dry ice in it, and it says, you must not drink out of your glass, you must drink out of the straw from the bottom of the glass.
Yeah, like, you get health warnings to drink through a straw, which is kind of like just weird and wonderful in itself. And you go up to the bar, and already, like, the look of the place is wonderful. It's got a kind of like metal effect bar, and they are mixing the cocktails, but you get some of them you get pre-mixed and they're already producing the dry ice steam. Others of which you grab these like almost test tube, like they're beakers from a lab, and you take them back to your table and you pour them in one at a time. If you look at SW20's social media for the post for this, the wonderful Carl posted one of the videos which I took, which was of us mixing the cocktail together.
Yeah, that's the one I had that was the colour changing one.
Yeah,
and that's really fascinating. The only thing I would say, lovely if you're a real sweet tooth, because funnily enough, I am a sweet tooth, but it was that little bit extra sweet. You actually liked it, didn't you? So
yeah, I really
but
liked
I swapped
it,
with you, so that's what we do. We both buy two different cocktails so that we swap halfway.
We both buy two different cocktails. So no, four we cocktails.
Both. Okay, we both buy one cocktail each, right? And you laugh, but once we spent a whole evening, not there, somewhere else doing cocktails, and because Ian was talking like he normally does all the time and not noticing.
True.
I was drinking all the cocktails down to halfway, and then he was like, oh, should we swap over now?
Yeah, and then I noticed, I go, wait a minute.
Hang on.
Yeah, because Nick was evil. That's what we established here. But it is absolutely wonderful. And I do love that thing of, you know, again, you do get the wonderful service where they mix up the cocktails and they pass them over to you. And other ones you get to mix on the table. I love that thing of you get to do the interaction. And just when I was standing at the bar, there were some cocktails, because I don't like gin, for instance. They've got wonderful selections of different kind of boozes you can choose. So you've got loads of gin cocktails, loads of vodka ones, and loads of whiskey ones. And so I avoided the gym ones, but like just watching them being made at the bar is just lovely. What are you giggling at, woman?
What's the song? Is it Thump? Oh, there's a whiskey one. There's a da-da-da. Oh, it sounded like you were doing some alternative theme for that. No, it was gym ones. Another week. And then I don't know, gym ones.
Was that how the song goes? There was a gym one, there was another gym one.
And I don't like gym ones. Yeah, a bit like that.
Believe it or not, we're not drunk right now. We're just very, very tired, and we might get a little bit anarchic when we're tired.
Oh, don't forget about your hip flask.
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. You get some of them which have a hip flask with them. So, you pour in the ingredients from the hip flask, and you've got a choice. You can either hand back the hip flask and get some money off the next cocktail, or you can take it as a souvenir, which we ended up doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was absolutely lovely. Again, it's these little weird touches which I love, these little things out the ordinary. So as I say, I think it's well worth checking this one out and checking out the Dead Canary, because I think they both do something different. So they've definitely got the sort of like lab feel to The Alchemist, and the Dead Canary's got more of a kind of speakeasy underground kind of vibe.
I kind of agree with what you're saying, because I did the ingredients for the speakeasy were slightly different, which is what I really like. But then, like you say, The Alchemist had some great cocktails that you kind of, you know, if you don't want something a bit different, if you want something you can trust, that's, it was nice.
Well, the cocktails that they've got are their own designs. I want to point that out. But they're just using more traditional flavours. So they are more like the cocktails that you might be used to. So again, like a lot of people like the familiar, and that's really nice. But they present it so well. I think that's where they have their own unique space, not only their own cocktails but also their own presentation. And I just love, being a sci-fi fan myself, as you may have noticed with some of my guests recently, I promise we will soon have some non-sci-fi guests again on the Dr. Squee show. I do usually mix it up a bit, but because I do love sci-fi and things like that, when you give me a drink which is coming up with smoke like it's just come out of Frankenstein's lab, I'm a happy man. Did you have any of the cocktails there that we had? Can you remember any of them? Because it was a little while ago, I will admit. But
I'll have a look and see.
We've got Nicola with the menu. Just read out like a couple of the cocktails. Indeed.
Okay, some of the ones we had. The one I had that was the one you make the colours change yourself was called the colour changing one, and that was Grey Goose vodka. Some things I can't pronounce: apple soda, citrus, and a bit of magic. That's what that one's described as. After that, I'm not sure what we had, because what I did was I went down the list trying to find ones that didn't have gin, because again, I don't drink gin either. I think you had the hip flask colada, which had a lot of rum in it and coconut and pineapple, and you can keep your hip flask. So you had that one. There's so many. There's a poison apple. Punchy cucumber, if you fancy something bit refreshing with cucumber, you know, if you haven't had your veg. I'm now whittling on about.
There's a wonderful selection.
There's amazing selection.
I mean, there's some which are more traditional, like Sex on the Beach. They've got like the really nice range, and it's worth noting that the same as the Dead Canary, this is one where you might want to have a little extra cash on you. It's not the cheapest, but they are just full of alcohol, and they are just such a wonderful presentation. So I think it's worth the extra money for that kind of presentation and those kind of wonderful cocktails. So please do check it out.
The only downside, I would say, and this is not against vegans at all.
It's going to be against vegans. Yeah. Just wait for this. It's going to be a dig at me.
Only because we share the cocktails. And I sit and I go, oh, that looks lovely. Oh, it's got cream in it. Oh, that looks lovely. Oh, they put a dash of milk in it. Oh, that looks...
And how do you think I feel? Where's the milk alternative? Where's the almond milk in these?
Oh, that's the only downside.
So you can enjoy all your milky cocktails as well if you're not vegan. No, really, we had an absolute blast there.
Yeah, we
did.
I'd
like to thank the good people at The Alchemist for playing host to us that evening. I would say, as I say, remember, don't be tempted to down the first drink. Like, we didn't down it, but we were drinking them fairly fast. And by the second one, you're like slowing right down.
Yeah, we were a bit drunk when we left there. And we like realised we had to go out for dinner that evening. And we're like, oops.
And that was actually for our dinner with the some of the wonderful presenters at SW20 Radio. So it was such a magical day for us. And The Alchemists were definitely a part of that magic.
I had to go home and sober up for a couple of hours.
Yeah, true story.
Yep.
Guys, we're going to play a few more tracks. Thank you very much, Nicola.
My pleasure.
And by the way, thank you to everyone who continues to suggest paperback writer for our written theme. Apparently, that's a very popular one in this theme. I've got about Brilliant. Five different people requesting that.
Aww.
So if you did request it, you missed it. What can I say?
We have to play it five more times.
We're not going to do it. We're now going to go over to... I like this. It's a bit of a left field choice. So I'm just going to bring up who selected this. So they've said it's a bit of piece, but I think this is perfect. This is by Hannah DeCapri Wells, and she's selected A Bit of Peace, But I Love You from the Bottom of My Pencil Case. So this is Song for Whoever. Well, it's the song for Hannah. And this is by The Beautiful South. You're listening to SW20 Radio.
I love you from the bottom of my pencil case.
That is Barry Manilow. I write the songs. So as Barry Jones, our very own Barry, has just put, you can't beat a bit of Barry Manilow. And it's so true. And he mentions there that he was the one who was there when songs were first written or something along those lines. And to be honest with you, Barry, you know, looking at you these days, that might be true. I'm only kidding, Barry Manilow. You're only as young as your last face. So he's just not that old at all. Barry Manilow, I apologise. He is, of course, a legend. Guys, look, we're near the end of the show, and what a cracker it's been. We've had New York Times bestseller Una McCormack on the show tonight. We've had Nicola joining me to talk about the Alchemist Cocktail Lounge in our Man About Town feature, and we've had your wonderful selections of songs regarding writers. And that last one, which was, of course, Barry Manilow, I Write the Songs, that was selected. I'm just trying to find the request now. Professional. I believe that was Karen Evans who requested that one. She's made so many requests, I've actually lost all her requests. That's how many requests she's put there. Guys, it's been an amazing show. Just to remind you, you of course can enjoy so many other wonderful shows right here on SW20 Radio. So if you tune in on Friday, you'll hear the boss man himself, Barry Jones, welcome you to the weekend with some feel-good tunes. My boy Matt Lees will be here on Thursday in the morning with Matt in the Morning from 9 o'clock, starting your day right. He plays such games as 3, 6 and 11, the world's most frustrating game, as well as playing some banging tunes. And I know RT, who joins us on the weekend, would want me to say banging tunes. He's a big fan of that word. We've got Amy C on the weekends. We've got so many wonderful shows. And if we haven't got a live DJ, we've got the auto DJ playing the best tunes known to man here on SW20 Radio, the new sound of South Wales. As well as all that, just later on tonight, we've got The Sound of Nashville, our country show. And right after this show, you can enjoy the Rock and Metal show, which I'm a huge fan of rock and metal, as you might get from some of my selections sometimes, which I choose to play. It's always such a privilege to hang out with you guys and to get to do this every week. I've had a wonderful time. It takes away the stresses of my week. I don't know about yours as I deal with three dogs. Why would I do this to myself? So guys, please look after yourselves and each other. Please have a lovely week until we talk again next week. And in the meantime, please remember, in a world where you can be absolutely anything, please be kind. I've been Dr. Squee. That was my show.
I'm not trying to win. I'm not doing this because I want to beat someone, because I hate someone, or because I want to blame someone. It's not because it's fun. God knows it's not because it's easy. It's not even because it works, because it hardly ever does. I do what I do because it's right, because it's decent, and above all, it's kind. It's just that. Just kind. Hey, you know, maybe there's no point in any of this at all, but it's the best I can do. Why not? Just at the end. Just be kind.